Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
We're joined today by Paul Johnson from Power Metals, but we want to talk, Paul, about the early days before we go to modern times, up to date.
Well, good afternoon, Alex. Yeah, that's when we were younger.
That's when I had that one suit and my Argos camera for 120 quid. And I used to walk up Edgware Road, which is the longest road in the world, may I add.
Yeah, that was back in Metal Tiger days. I remember you coming to the office, I think just, it wasn't too long after we started the business.
I'm just trying to think. I seen you at the show. I can't remember the show in 2015, you and Cameron. The Golden Bears.
Oh, that'll be... Master Investor or something like that, yeah.
I think it was the Golden Bears, I think.
Was it? Yeah.
I think so. Well, I've seen you a couple of times, but I remember I came across you and Cameron, and you were doing Metal Tiger, and if I remember rightly, you were more investing at the start. You were investing in companies.
Yeah, because Metal Tiger was an investment company. We started it into mid-2014. And we got we sorted out this vehicle, which had a few debts in mid-14, raised a bit more money around October 14, and then put I think £150,000 of it into Kibo Mining, as it was. And we put it in at 1.5 pence for 10 million shares and had 10 million warrants at 3 pence. And literally, within about 5 days of us sending the cash, the share price went up to I think it was 12p at one point.
Good grief.
And, yeah, we sold out our position in that, or Metal Tiger's position, and we made about £1 million.
Bloody hell.
It was our first major investment. And, that set us up so we could do all these other things that Metal Tiger did. It was involved in Spain. It was involved in Thailand. And it was critically involved in Botswana, where we had a big copper or collection of exploration licenses targeting copper in a partnership with MOD Resources, an Australian company. And you were around just at that time, starting off Share Talk, when we were just in the building phase of that company. And that was a bit of a cracker, actually, in the early days. So it was a good time to get involved.
Well, back in them days, that we had I invented the Walsall Rat Pack, because you guys used to go on the roads. We used to go down to the Village Hotel near Birmingham. And I used to travel down when you were doing your presentations.
And that's right.
Yeah, you had like...
yeah, that's right.
Remember, you had like a hardcore of investors. And what really educated me back then was we stayed overnight in the hotel, and I sat down with, I've got some of them turned out to be friends even to this day, but I remember they all got themselves together and you guys wanted to raise money, and they raised £250,000 in the room that night to invest on the Monday, which, you know, it's an education for me, because I've never seen, you know, actually shareholders together in doing that. So you had a very loyal fan base, so to speak.
Yeah, we did, that's where we developed the I think, not that place as it were, but around that time we developed the concept of doing the shares with warrants, which had happened quite a lot in the, you know, the Canadian markets, but there wasn't that much of it going around in the UK. So we were doing financings at, I can't remember the exact price, but I think it was like 0.7, 0.8 of a pence per share, and then the warrants were at twice the price, or something like that. And we did small financings, but we did them back then, not too often, but enough to keep the business running. Yeah. And it obviously it all paid off in the end, because we put some of that money into Botswana and the big T3 copper discovery that was made in early 2016, which changed the entire dynamic for Metal Tiger, which was a nice thing to have happen to us.
Well, I remembered I met you and Cameron Parry, and we were at the Big Gibbs show, his first show he had in London. And when I was interviewing you guys on the camera, you said to me, the elephant in the room. I always remember that comment when you were referring to Botswana and the copper play. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
On the stairs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you interviewed us on the stairs and everyone was walking past.
I know.
That's the most difficult, difficult and professional interview to do. But it was, yeah, it was at the critical point because when we signed up on the Botswana deal, I remember getting a large amount of news from shareholders by email and message and all sorts, and saying, why have you invested, you know, some of the company's money in the Kalahari? But I think people just thought it was a desert and there weren't, you know, there was nothing there. And, of course, we've been working with this project for quite some time and building up a lot of knowledge about what was there through our partners that was then MOD Resources. So it was far from being just a patch of ground in the middle of nowhere. It was something that was well understood with clear targets. And and it was, for us, it was obvious. And that you often hear them, people talk about potential elephant discoveries, and there's plenty of those, you know, still to be made. But you have to go into territories that perhaps people are a bit unfamiliar with, or use technology that people don't, you know, are not that aware of to find these things. And that's what happened back in 2016 with the big discovery in Botswana. And that's what we've been doing, you know, with Power Metal Resources recently, with lots of our new project acquisitions. So it was a great time back in 2015 and 2016.
Yeah, and
it was fun, wasn't it? Because we were doing things completely differently from the way the market had done them before, in the way that we built Metal Tiger. And there was so much energy in that business, which I'm trying to replicate, of course, you know, in what we're doing with Power Metal. But it led to one of the biggest discoveries in London market that had happened for quite some time.
That was amazing the way it turned out. Well, we took the Mod Resources, the team. We had them at some of our shows, so we knew the guys. Also, we met Terry Grammer when he was down in London. His character, you know what I mean? God bless him. But Mod Resources, it just turned out to be a monster.
It was sold. Metal Tiger, I think, vended their interest, or most of their interest, back to MOD Resources, and then MOD was sold to Sandfire, the much larger Australian listed company, taking effectively the T3 deposit, and there's various other potential deposits in that area that are being worked on. So a huge success story, and it all kind of came about because Metal Tiger made a significant amount of money on Kibo mining, reinvested that money, supported MOD Resources by paying $100,000 to enable them to secure that project at a time when the market wasn't supporting junior companies at all. They couldn't get the money. That $100,000 wasn't available, but we provided it. And then the chain of events carried on and led to that big discovery, which is what we're all about, isn't it? That's what makes the difference. And you've seen that recently with these massive valuation companies like Greatland Gold and Eurasia Mining, and what they've been able to achieve on the back of large metal deposits that have been discovered.
Well, I wanted to talk about them, but before I go on to that, there's another comment I meant. I mean, you were talking, you probably won't recollect this. I can't remember the hotel next to the office, we were in there, and you used the term coiled spring. And I think Metal Tiger at that time, the share price was under 1 pence. And then you said coiled spring, and within 2 to 3 months, I remember the share price going past 6 pence. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it did. Maybe that was me being optimistic and hopeful rather than having any kind of particular knowledge.
Oh, no, but you know, it's positive, aren't you? You know?
Yeah, these things on the junior markets, the resource companies, it's very rare that they just automatically leap to life. You have to put so much energy into them, whether it's, you know, workflow, news flow, communications. You have to put your heart and soul into it most of the time. And you don't get a big reaction at first. commonly. But eventually the energy builds up and all of a sudden all the work that you've done, all the comms that you've done, leads to a dramatic and almost overnight revaluation. And that's perhaps what I was indicating back then, that we worked relentlessly at Metal Tiger. We were in the office, late at night. And I had to travel back home on the tube and then the train. So it was really kind of late nights, and I dragged myself out of bed first thing in the morning and get back into the office. I'm fortunate now because I don't live too far away from the office, and I walk down or get the bus. So it's a lot easier to do it to do this business than that one because of the there isn't the commute. But yeah, I think, you know, probably, possibly, and then maybe it's optimism again, the power metal position now. But and also, I'm going to skip back again to Greatland and to Eurasia.
When I was
with Metal Tiger, we invested £150,000, I think it was, again in late 14 in Eurasia Mining. And the reason we kind of did it perhaps in the back of our minds was that there was clearly some incredible value in their asset base, incredible value. And the ability for them to take West Kitlim into production was important, mm-hmm. but also the Muncha Tundra license was just unique, really. And the value that was potentially there for that particular interest was tremendous and far in excess of the market cap. And that's come true. We were maybe with Metal Tiger 5 years early or 4 years early, but it just showed that there was value there. And then with Greatland really was struggling along for 10 years, not really performing dramatically well. And in, I think it was about April 16, we restructured and refinanced Greatland Gold through Metal Tiger. We put in £150,000 again at 0.1 pence of a share with, I think we had 0.3 warrants, was it? Or 0.2 warrants, 150 million, 0.2 warrants. So when you consider the share price nowadays is trading in the 20s,
of
pence, you know, that was incredible. And that company, in the space of, what, 4 years, maybe less than 4 years, about 4 years, has gone up so dramatically. It's kind of giving all of the shareholders and all of the investors in the junior resource companies on AIM great kind of reason to carry on trying to find the next one, because it can be life-changing money if these things come in. They don't often come in, but of course if you've got a diversified portfolio across a number of different interests, you stand a reasonable chance. And that was an incredible performer.
Well, I met Gretlin through you, and we used to go down to the shores in London, and then we interviewed them, and well, I'm still friends with Gervais today actually. But I watched, like you say, it was such a frustrating, you watched it, and it was so frustrating. But then as it started to unfold, and it gained momentum, and now today, is the market cap extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, well, so you've had both of them, I think, have touched £1 billion.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact market cap at the moment, but they're around 800 million or something of that order. So huge market caps, and both of them, of course, with Greatland, it's the Havieron project.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them have got major projects underlying the market values, and it's just an incredible story. And from the problem is, of course, from my perspective, that if you're an aspirational CEO, then you would. In the recent past, you would have wanted to take a junior company from low valuation up to £1 billion, because that's the big marker, isn't it? But
yeah,
that's kind of old news now, because Greatland have done it, Eurasia Mining have done it, and so I think the only thing we can target now is £2 billion, because then you can be bigger than both of them put together, which is a glorious target to go for. Whether it's attainable or not, we will see. But I tell you what those two stories have shown us and shown all CEOs is that you can actually go for the big, big valuations. You've got to find something or have something in your portfolio of real substance to do it. But in both cases, they've been working hard. I've known Christian Schaffalewski for a long time at Eurasia. You know, in the early days of Mining Maven, we used to interview him in Grosvenor Gardens, just near Paddington Station, when his office was based there. I think they knocked that building down, so he had to move out and went over to London Bridge. But he's been working on that business for a long period of time. You know, it's been a real long haul. In the case of Gervais, when I was on the board of Greatland Gold for a short while in 16, as part of the restructuring, I met Gervais and totally impressed by his kind of switched on approach, attitude. And it's only taken him 4 years to achieve greatness in terms of the markets. But he's done it with a diligent, focused, capable an absolutely switched on approach. And that's and it goes to show people who are working as CEOs who perhaps are focused on the wrong things in their business. They need to be focused on a lot of hard work and a lot of commitments and dedication. And they need to make some very, very kind of careful judgments about their businesses. And they need to be switched on to the investor base and make sure that they, you know, they engage with that investor base in the right way. I'm in danger of just becoming an old curmudgeon, really, and just whinging and whining about how people don't do the right thing for investors. But it is a good point. You know, we were talking about that just before we started the call.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
That, you know, you can actually look at a lot of these companies. I can look at a lot of them now because I know many of them. And I can see the ones that take the salary. I can see the ones that are focused on themselves and not their shareholders. And they do stand out like a sore thumb after a while. The people that don't get back to you when you engage with them, you know, either as an investor or as a service provider, you know, the people that switch off for large parts of the week, the people that don't bother to put news flow out to market, the people that don't bother to do the interviews and the discussions, I think they treat the investor base with disrespect, to be honest. Because I think your primary role as a director is to get off your backside, get out there, get work done, announce it honestly, and communicate about it in every way, shape, and form. And if you can't do it because you're too old and tired, or because you've not got the right kind of energy of the business, or because you don't have the right kind of spirit, well, go and work in a big multinational corporation where they'll give you 75, 80 grand a year just to do a basic middle management job. And don't bore us on the, you know, on the public company markets with your laissez-faire attitude to investors. You know, there's plenty of good people out there, given the opportunity, who would go into roles in public companies and try their best and really work hard for the investor base.
Well, I've got to agree with you. And obviously, I don't want to sound controversial, because we talk a lot of companies, but at the end of the day, it is the investors who pay their wages, and that's the bottom line. The investment it that is. Comes in from investors, from grassroots, private, retail, even institutional investors, it's people's money. So they have got a,
it is people's
they have got a duty.
It is people's money. Now, look, the markets are unforgiving. And I kind of get the concept of, you know, company directors getting a little bit long in the tooth with all of this business and getting frustrated because, you know, your friends, I've said this before, probably to you, actually, Alex, but were your friends at 1P, the investor shareholder friends at 1P, who get in touch with you and want to know about the business. Well, they're gone at 5. Yeah. And then you pick up a new set of friends that bought a share at 5P. Well, they're gone at 10. And you know, it's a bit of a lonely business sometimes. But you know that if you've got some degree of intelligence, and let's be honest, not everybody has, but if you've got some degree of intelligence, you realise that the public markets are a hard place to do the business and to do it properly. But you've got to be switched on to that fact when you take on the role. You've got to accept that it doesn't matter how much anyone puts into your company, whether it's £100 or, you know, £500,000. It means a lot to people. And you generally find that the £100 investors, it means a lot more to, because it's a small, it's a large proportion of a small portfolio.
Yeah.
Whereas the £500,000 investors, it might be a small proportion of a large portfolio. And they don't have the same passion. But I tell you who will get on Twitter, who will get on the bulletin boards, who will go on the various social media outlets and evangelize for your company. It's your £100 investor and your £1,000 investor that will do it. Far more than any large institutional investors will do. So I think if you want to build your business, you have to have an eye for the private investors, and particularly actually the smaller private investors, because they're the ones that really get behind your stock and will give you a massive lift.
I was just thinking there, to maybe jump forward, do you realise you must release the most RNSs out of maybe any AIM company this year? I don't know if I'm correct in saying that, but it's a lot.
Yeah, well, we
it's
don't.
It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. I'm just saying, though. I don't know if you're aware of it.
Okay. Well, my
pound for pound, you release on the London Stock Exchange. You must release. I'm talking about Power Energy here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if okay, so
what's
if you look at
that then for the investor, what's the mode of thought?
Well, it's very simple. I am fed up to the back teeth over the last 8 years of seeing. Of working hard to restructure, refinance companies, to put them into a very good place. Some of the stuff people will know about and some of the stuff people won't know about. And then seeing very large salaries being paid to directors of those companies after we've refinanced, restructured them, given them a clean vehicle with plenty of cash in it, to see salary levels so high, to see the level of news flow so low, to see their aggressiveness with regard to the growth and development of the business not really there, that I decided that I was going to stop all this nonsense of working on five different things at the same time, in the sense of in different vehicles, and then handing them over. And I was going to start to focus on one, which is Power. So yeah. Everything that comes in, into pipeline wise of any substance in terms of new projects and opportunities have gone into Power, and going forward, subject to us having room, then they will go into Power, and some of those things will spin off, of course, vend out and put on our balance sheet as assets, but they will be channeled through Power. I'm only on one PLC board now, which is Power. And what that means as we sit here today is that we've effectively got five AIM companies in one wrapper. We've got, precious metals projects in North America and in Australia. And we've got base metal projects and strategic metals in Africa. But they're in different jurisdictions, different commodities. There's a good spread. But we've got far more projects than you would ordinarily see in one wrapper. And that's deliberate. And my job is, of course, to push them forward as much as I sensibly can inside Power, and then to vend certain things outside into their own vehicles or into other vehicles that are already established, get value for them that goes onto our balance sheet and builds our balance sheet, and that helps to fund the rest of the business. And then on the stuff that we really want to keep inside the company, we carry on exploring. So the reason why I'm releasing so many items of news is because we've got multiple major projects in the same vehicle.
Yes.
And that means that, we get a development in one of those projects, we release it. And if we've got nine projects, and if we just decide, which we won't, by the way, to release one update on each of those nine projects every 3 months, which is nothing. That's effectively four RNSs a year per project, or 36 per annum across the business. On top of that, you've got your regulatory announcements, half year and full year. You've got your things like director transactions. You've got TR1s coming in. You've got, a whole heap of different announcements related to the PLC. So before you even start, if you have a quarter announcement philosophy on your project, you're looking at, over an announcement a week, probably a one and a half a week. We've got nine active projects. They're all substantial or potentially substantial. Everything in our business is moving forward. And alongside the volume and the size and scale of these projects. We've also got an attitude to communications where we want to show and tell people. Sounds like school, doesn't it? Show and tell. where we want to actually show people what we're doing, tell them about our projects. So in Botswana on hole one, we didn't just say, exploration drilling's commenced and then disappear off for a few months. We actually said, we've signed the contract on drilling. We're mobilizing to site. Drilling has started. There's some pictures on our website so you can see what it looks like. You know, drilling is now down to X meters.
Yeah, I was watching that.
We're now approaching the target depth. Here's a summary of our initial findings in hole one and what work we're doing. And we've taken people through the process so they can see what happens. So that means there's going to be more news. There's going to be more updates. And that philosophy will carry on, because I don't think it's bad for our shareholders and other investors to see what we're doing in the business. And they can see the volume of activity. And every day I wake up, and every day, because we're doing so much every day, I think, I wonder, is today the day when we're going to get one of those emails or messages that transforms the company? And it could happen at any time in our business because there's so much going on. We've already had certain things happen that are major and material in the company within the announcements that we've released. But, you know, every day there could be something else happen that really makes a difference. And that makes it exciting, Alex, every day of the week.
So not just to reverse this slightly, we had the COVID situation breaking in March and the markets obviously suffered. And I think your SP, if memory serves me correctly, 0.21 it hit?
Yeah, something like that. It was around that level.
Yeah, so what's going through your head, right? What at that precise moment, obviously, what's going through your head? All the hard work and then you're looking at that.
Oh.
It must be devastating.
I was working from home around that time when that happened, because we were all kind of had to go home, didn't we?
Yeah.
I was in the front room. Michelle was here, the kids, all at home. Lots of distractions going on. I'm not entirely sure they were happy about me being there after a while, because we converted one of the rooms in the house into a mini office. And it was funny, because that's, when you've been in the markets for a while and you see these pullbacks and these major kind of collapses in the market,
yeah,
you kind of know it's coming back. So I was quite confident at that point. My biggest problem was I couldn't buy any shares. Because if you recall, we had the COVID disruptions caused lots of people with financial accounts to be delayed with things.
Mm-hmm.
We had the audit. Audited financial accounts were due out at the end of March, and then they were with the approval of the exchange, and we went through the approval of the company's house and all that. Like a lot of other companies, we had to defer our results a little bit whilst the auditors kind of were able to regroup and finish the job, as it were. So we didn't release, I think, until May. So my biggest frustration when it was that level, 0.2, was that I just wanted to buy stock and I couldn't. So I knew it was going back up, and it was an artificial dip, to be quite frank.
Manipulation.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of companies had that situation. We were working heavily on Australia at the time. I mean, really heavily on Australia, because we'd seen this opportunity. We'd been working on Australia, actually, since about August 2019. But this Victorian opportunity was absolutely clear and apparent in the first quarter of 2020. So we were doing an awful lot of work on that. So it's quite a buzzy time for us. It was a bit frustrating to see the market value fall so much, and it was completely out of sync with what we built. So, we just pushed on, really, to be honest, and just cracked on with things. It's my job, you know. If so, I notice, people are always watching you in these companies. Investors are watching you for what you do, and they like it when good things happen and how you communicate that obviously. But I think a lot of astute investors are looking out for when things go badly, when you face challenges and how you handle them, because that's the measure of the company in the medium and long term, is can you deal with crises and difficulties. Yeah. And we really pushed on heavily during that period and just cracked on with our lives. And that's how we approach every project. You know, we have an end game, a focus, something, you know, a set objective, things we have to do. And we just really keep our heads down and get going, which is essential when you're in operational mode, as we are now with so many projects running. You constantly get things that you have to deal with, you know, whether it's a new part for a drill rig, whether it's you can't get the drill rig up the side of a project, a steep incline on an access road, as we had with Silver Peak, and we had to switch to a new program. You know, you have to kind of be really switched on and able to swap and change.
Fluid and liquid situations.
It's what the shareholders pay me for. You know, they don't pay me to sit there and squirm and complain and then issue a real kind of real downer of an announcement to say, sorry guys, we couldn't actually get the drill rig up the side of the mountain, you know, so we just stopped and we'll come back in 6 months. You must be joking. You know, these people have got their cash at stake, right? This is when you invest in these companies, it's in post-tax income. So you've earned this money, or someone's giving you the money, maybe, I don't know. But most of the people have earned the cash. They've paid the tax on it. And they have the faith to pull it into your business, either on the market or in financings. It doesn't matter where it comes from. They invest it in your business. Do you got the duty to get off your backside, as I said before, and do the best for them and deliver them you know, a major return? If you can deliver a 20 times return, which sounds incredible, but in our marketplace, that's what the juniors need to be going for, you know. You can take somebody's £100 investment and turn it into 2,000, you know, or a 10,000 investment and turn it into 200,000.
I've got to say, we were covering a company this year. I'll be rude to name them. But anyway, they were at spot 10 and we were putting stuff out on the website, and the interest was hardly there. And we did a webinar with them, so if anybody looks at our stuff, they know who I'm talking about. And they went on in the next 3 months to 10 bag.
Yeah.
And now, before, when I was going on the chat board to post something on to say, oh, we've done an interview, there'd be like 100 messages, where previously right. There'd be two. There'd be tumbleweed going through the message board.
Tumbleweed.
It's madness. It's just pure madness. Anyway, just to change the conversation slightly, you touched on Australia, the gold joint venture. Is that where you're looking to maybe IPO with Red Rock Resources?
Yeah, so we've Power Metal has a 49.9% interest. Our partner is Red Rock Resources, yeah. Also listed on AIM with the ticker RRR. They have 50.1%. We've talked in announcements that we're looking at a IPO of some or all of the interest in the joint venture on our North American Stock Exchange. Excuse me. And we're going through that process because it's, you know, you have to set all this stuff up. When you get things set up and ready to go, they move quite quickly. But you have to go through the process of doing lots of technical stuff and lots of administration stuff. Yeah. And so we've done technical reports on each of our projects, apart from, I think, out of the – there's 13 license applications in Victoria covering gold prospective ground. Now, we've done technical reports on – I'm going to get this wrong probably, but I think 11 of them.
Yeah.
By project, and they're all on our website, so you can see the technical reports, which talks about the history, the geology and the prospectivity and the next stage exploration that needs to be done. And then for 8 of the project interests, we've done a National Instrument 43-101 technical report, which is the lead document that you need to do a listing on the North American Stock Exchange of some of these interests. We're just waiting for the first grants to be approved from the local regulator in Victoria, and that's a process that has, you know, has naturally taken some time, as it normally would do. And they've been quite incredible because they've been working through not just an absolute deluge of interest in Victoria, because it's one of the hottest postcodes in the world for gold. But they've also been working through the COVID disruption. So fair play to them. So when those grants are awarded, then it puts us in a position to A, do work on the ground, which is absolutely key, because we have multiple things we'd like to do. We think it's hugely prospective. Well, we know it is, to be honest. We don't think, we know it is. And we want to do exploration work ASAP. But in parallel, by having granted licenses, it makes the process of looking at pushing forward and a listing of some or all of our interests far more relevant than if it's just in application status, which the, all of our project interests are applications at the moment. They haven't yet switched over to full granted status. So, yeah, it's all there. It's all bubbling. It's one of a number of our interests in the power metal portfolio that will find its way in to a corporate wrapper probably in not too distant future. You know, we've also got our joint venture with Kavango Resources, which in the public domain, we've said that we are looking to list that joint venture. And we're working, you know, as rapidly as we can on that as well. And there's other things where we're looking at vend out options and crystallizing value, because when you have these projects as exploration projects, you have to pay for them. They are assets, but they're also liabilities in a way, because you have to put money into them all the time to keep them running. And that money in most exploration companies would come from financings from the market. In our case, we want to become self-sustaining financially. So as much as we can put into vend out scenarios where we can dispose of some of our interests and then take shares or cash for those disposals, then we can put that onto our balance sheet and it increases our working capital. It means we have pools of capital that we can tap into when we need to, and we don't have to go and raise through financings unless we really wanted to. So, yeah, that's there's a lot of that corporate work going on at the minute.
Makes perfect
In fact,
sense,
to be honest, I'm reading, I've been reading this weekend a 58-page legal document, which is absolutely fabulous. I can tell you, I've been sat there this morning. The kids have been one of them was playing on the iPad. The other one was watching The Grinch on TV. And I was doing a preliminary review of this 58-page document. And it's, you know, there's no time at the moment to stop, really. It's fantastic. And my six-year-old Thomas is very helpful when it comes to complex legal matters.
In the family gene pool, Paul.
He gives me lots of assistance. But no, we've
been an accountant yourself.
There's a lot of stuff going on at the minute. It is I'm sure a lot of these directors in companies live an absolutely cracking life, because they don't really have to do too much work, and they get away with it. In my case, I've never worked as hard in my life, but because it's going so positively and so well, you know, the energy levels are always high. And my driving force, because I've waffled on a lot, I know, Alex, sorry, but my driving force is, if you invest in my company, you put your money into my company, I might not be able to do it, but I'm going to give it my all to make you a huge return on your investment that justifies the decision to put the cash in. It's going to be done through mainly relentless hard work, but it's also going to be done hopefully with a bit of creative innovation in the process. I just want people who put the cash in to walk away with dramatically more than what they put in the first place. That's the only reason for junior resource companies to be in existence, to have that strategic focus on making a dramatic difference, firstly to the shareholders, you know, in the business, but also, you know, that you've got to remember that there is in London. We have a great reputation in London, around the world as a major financial centre. There is an opportunity here for if enough decent companies come together and work really hard and deliver for the shareholders, to turn us into a resource centre at the moment, we lag really behind, of course, Australia and Canada. And in some respects, there's good reason for that, because of, obviously they have their own natural homeland resources. So there's going to be a load more companies that list on their exchanges. But our marketplace for resource companies is really small. And there's an opportunity for more of these vehicles to come along and to really, really push on and do a great job and make investors a lot of money. That's why in London, what makes it slightly different to the other big exchanges is that if there is an interesting run on nickel or junior gold plays in Australia, there are not that many ways that investors can get into that particular commodity through a junior resource company, because there's so few of them around. So you do see in London, I think, disproportionate share price rises when a particular sector is in favour.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of great reasons to invest in the junior resource companies. I think the companies should be run to deliver a major return for their shareholders, and everything should be focused on that. And I want to make Power Metal one of the best.
Right, I'll ask you a question to finish off. The million-dollar question. What's the end game for Paul Johnson and Power Metal?
Well, I'm not... It's a funny one, that, because in times past, of course, I restructured, refinanced and generally moved on. I'm not doing that this time. As long as I'm wanted, I'll crack on and keep going. Clearly, we need to be a £2 billion company.
Okay.
Or at least touch on that, because I'm not having, Gervais at Greatland and Christian at Eurasia having all the glory with £1 billion each. It's just not acceptable.
That's true.
But joking aside, we've got a serious amount of work to do. We've got a serious collection of projects. Not everything will go in accordance with plans and objectives. We know that, but we've got enough in the tank already in terms of our project mix, I believe, to deliver more than one major discovery. We just have to go and find it and do the work to go and find that discovery or discoveries. Mm-hmm. So all I want to do at the moment, I don't really have any grand long-term plan or medium-term plan. All I'm doing is I'm focused on pushing as much activity through our projects as I can, pushing as much corporate development work through the business as I can, building the value of the company as rapidly as I can, and then we'll take it from there. But I got no intention of... I think this is probably my last kind of hurrah in the sector. Really? And I say last not because I feel it's time to give up. I say that because I think I'm going to be stuck with it for quite some time. I mean, the shareholders ultimately may say no thanks, and I have to move on. But if I'm given the opportunity to carry on and push this business forward, I'm going to stay with this and build it into as large an organisation as I can, and one that has a long-term place in the resources business, not just a flash-in-the-pan success story that dies a death, something that has real substance and longevity to it.
Paul Johnson, Power Metals, thanks very much for taking the time to speak to Share Talk.
Thank you very much, Alex, and we'll have to do one of these before 5 years again. maybe we can do it after we've had
a major strike,
a notable strike, shall we say?
I use the word major.
Well, of course, the irony is we might have had one already, because things are moving so fast and furiously. But
all right,
when everyone realises that we've had a major strike, and we're buzzing in the market, let's do another one.
We will do. I've got more than one suit now as well, so I'm okay.
I tell you what, if we get Power Metal Resources through 10 pence a share, I'll buy you a new suit.
Matland, here I come. All right, Paul.
don't be daft. Well, there's no need to go to Matland when there's Primark available.
True, that's true. All right, thanks for taking the time to speak to us.
Cheers. Thanks, Alex.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.